Here we are going to do our little death talk, which we gather to do every now and then. Regina, I was intrigued when you said how death has inspired me. That's not often a word one hears in relation to death, inspiration. Tell us more.
Yeah, indeed. And you know, I'm very happy that we're having this talk as well. And this thought has brought me to different places in my life. And the very first place that I remember consciously is, I don't know how old I was, maybe 10, maybe 12, maybe 13, due to my father being a doctor and sharing, you know, we were hearing about patients that would pass away, people that were sick. So death was part of a guest in our family. And I remember that I was lying in my bed when we would do those siestas in the South. And I was thinking of, wow, what would I do if I would be sick? Or what would I do if I would pass away, you know? So it kind of activated, these thoughts kind of didn't depress me or anything, but it rather activated my, hey, I want to do this. I want to do this before, you know, before that I come get there, you know, or it would actually even inspire my solution focus way of, you know, finding solutions to, oh, if I would have to deal with this, I would, you know, and I would start fantasizing. So I kind of released some strength inside of me. So funny, you know, if I think about now I'm in my 50s, so I'm thinking, wow, how did I see things like that in that early stage of my life? So that's one of the moments that death had an impact. So do you remember when it first had an impact in your life? Or
I grew up with a very, you know, in South India. And when I was home for holidays with my grandparents and so on, it was a constant round of people going to either engagement parties, weddings, or funerals, and then coming back and talking about it. And as a kid, you're in the background listening to all this, you know. And so and then coming to live in England, and it was a very different, like everything is so compartmentalized. There's not that interweaving and interconnection of life and death all in one fluid movement.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I began thinking more about things. And then about 25, 30 years ago, read this book, Intimate Death, where it was written in the French, La Mort Intime.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it in English, a little skinny book, and it was really inspirational. Yeah.
What did you take away from that booklet? Do you remember?
That it's preferable to make peace with it while you're still alive. Which I guess is part of why we gather and talk about how it relates to our work, what we do. And then you and I decided to start Global Death Commons because we're both intercultural coaches. And hey, what about death and culture? Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And how different it is dealt with.
Yeah.
And also something that you said kind of triggered this word of, or reminded me this word of demystifying, because that was for me the point, you know, as a child, I hadn't seen a dead person until I was, I don't know, in my 30s, I would say, you know. So although all these people were dying around me, you know, I was always don't come, and not even my great grandfather, I would be invited. I mean, they said, don't come to the funeral. So today, I would say not a wise choice, but that's what my parents could do, you know, and I was I didn't have an opinion, so I just followed, you know. But it's so much better to see those people when they die than at least you know, for really seeing and understanding that, you know, there is even more than just the body that obviously passed, you know, and doesn't live anymore. But there is so much more to it. So I'm very grateful that so many years after we met, Zareen, because we have been working together for so many years. But then one nice day, you know, you told me, "Oh, I'm doing these death cafes," and I was like,
I didn't. You found it. You
"I
found it
did."
on the Facebook thing. And then I was so surprised when I saw, oh, Regina has signed up for this.
Okay, even better. Yeah, so we have been talking about a lot of things, you know, we have been even friends, and we never talked about that topic, you know.
No, because I
Yeah.
kept it so separate also from my
Yeah.
professional life, if you will. You know, and then now I'm very happy. I've even put it on my whatever email signature host
Yeah.
for Ely Death Cafe.
Yeah.
And I'm just more open about it because I think it's healthier. And now there's more emphasis on mental health in the workplace post-COVID.
Yep.
And for mental health, talking about things is a big part of it. For most people, having a collection of bodies where you can process your thoughts and be heard about it.
Absolutely. I mean, I really enjoy those death cafe meetings. I mean, the first one I was so nervous. I was like, my, what am I going to say here, you know? But then it's every because everybody has space to just speak whatever it is, you know. And of everything that happened in the, you know, after COVID 2020 started a couple of months later. So we were talking with people who lost people who work in that area in the health area. So also extremely valuable to see what they're going through, their challenges, and people who are working like death doulas, you know, I felt so, and the more I talk to these people or listen to them, basically, the more I felt comfortable, you know. And then we started also, you know, I even started preparing a couple of things for my own future death, and or even talking with my family members, you know, which was such a big thing I could not have imagined 2 years back. So, yeah, so you're doing a great thing there, offering that space. I think that's it, you know, offering safe space for people to come in and just talk about it, because sometimes our friends or our family are not, you know, they already have their own thing, or they might not feel comfortable about it. So it's a very valuable, and especially since we are more in areas of the world where we don't speak so much about those things, right? At least here where I am.
Really, also in Greece, people are.
Yeah, they don't say the word, you know, they say he left. He's gone. They don't say he died. You would never hear that, you know. So it's kind of or if somebody like I remember when my Greek cousin committed suicide, that was also very quickly changed into he was sick and he died. So nobody would ever use that word again. While So nobody actually, and since I cannot go to his mother and my aunt, who I love dearly. I mean, I would till today I would not feel comfortable and say, "Hey, can you tell me what really happened?" Because, you know, everybody was telling a story. You don't really know. So it's very, yeah, it's very it's still a taboo topic, it's still untouchable, and then of course on the other side, I don't want to add more pain on a woman who has lost her child, which I feel is the most tough part in the world, you know, as a mother. We are both mothers. We know how we can imagine, I guess. Yeah. How has it changed for you with that work that you're doing as a death cafe host, reading the books, having been in situations where you had your own losses? How has death changed your life, Serene?
I think I have a more a more intimate relationship with death now, as in confronting my own mortality, trying in my own slow way because I'm so busy living, you know, that I still haven't done the death work.
Yeah.
Because, you know me, I like to be prepared and organized and sorted as much as I can. And even that basic admin stuff is not done yet. I'm getting there. I'm getting there slowly, yeah. Believe me. But how it has changed me, it's a journey, okay? Mm. So it's still unfolding. And right now, the thing I'm the most uncomfortable about, I can say, is the topic of climate grief.
Mm.
The fact that our world is dying. Full stop. And when you talked earlier about your cousin with suicide and then how it was kind of hush-hush and so on, that made me think how closely death is linked also to our social justice type issues. Because there's the whole naming and labeling and accepting and, you know, talking about things. And then in the social justice terms, who are the people being the most affected by climate emergency? It's not us in the settled West.
Of course not.
Yeah. Who are the people being displaced, becoming economic migrants, refugees? You know, so I'm not really a sci-fi type person, but I've been reading this book called The Parable of the Sower by a woman called Octavia Butler. And I have to take it in small pieces because it is so scary. If you think about the reality of hungry and starving people around you, trying to rob whatever supplies you have, guns, protecting, you know, it's really scary for me to think about all of that.
Yeah.
Because
it is.
In some of the people, they call it like hospicing our dying world, right?
Mm.
Because of course, if I think deeply on all that, then I have to think more also. So what am I going to do?
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. And because the topic is so huge, because, you know, also me, every now and then I see some fantastic documentaries. There is the Dalai Lama talking to what's that girl's name? That
Greta.
Greta. And then you see these fantastic, very impressive movies and everything. But then you say, okay, and what can I do now? So.
Well, Regina, may I say that what I have observed then, I mean, call it what you will, synchronicity, serendipity, mm. how our paths, you and I have known each other more than 15 years,
mm.
and our death paths only crossed 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. When time
so
is
what,
ready.
You said, what can we do? What can? And yes, we all want to know what we can do, but we are building community.
Yeah, and awareness. You know, because when I told you that, what can I do? Then actually I realized, okay, at least I'm trying to, for example, for me personally, I'm trying to not use plastic, you know, to use other materials, recyclable materials, or, you know, in my small, super small world, you know, and I'm telling my aunt, go and you and buy bulk instead of, you know, package the whatever rice or whatever she's buying, you know, so it's, I think raising awareness is the first step, because it's so big, and then you need to break it down in small units. Otherwise, it's the same like with death, you know, it's huge. So there's so many practical things involved.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. When the time is right, then we will know what to do, and we meet the right people. But yeah, death of, say again, how you call that? Death of nature? No, death of...
Yeah. I mean, it's called climate grief.
Climate death.
And then the term I used was hospicing our dying world. You know,
yeah,
hospice.
That's a tough one. Yeah.
Hospice.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then how do we hospice our dying world? Yeah. Right. But yeah. I am going to join the Climate Coaching Alliance. Mm. I don't even know if you've heard of that. It only started.
No.
I have had a very quick look because some coaches I know are involved in this. And it seems to be a really good initiative because as coaches, we do have our agency, right? And we yeah. touch lives and those people touch other, you know. So I will send you some information because it's very open source, open access. Everything is, you know, you join things.
Yeah, that's
no
what it
cost.
Has to be. Yeah.
It has
it
to
be open source, otherwise.
Absolutely.
It work.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, please. Please share.
I'll send you that. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, let's maybe shift this thing to a more life-giving because this is really, I mean, you know, it's also hard. It's not only touching, but it's even hurting a bit in my heart, you know, because
yeah.
it's, I mean, I live on the beach and I see the beaches every day and I feel like, gosh, you know, this is so terrible how they're full of plastic, of garbage, of, you know, and you feel like, whoa, what are we doing here? You know, and yeah. only seeing a little piece, imagine if I would see the whole thing. I mean, you don't want, you can't take it.
Yeah.
Still, I'd like to bring another example. Which is maybe a little bit opposite. It's like how seeing a dying person was actually, let me think. Yeah, it was the first person I was with when he was dying, and not just saw when he was dead or she was dead. How that made me realize that I want to have a child. So it was my father-in-law. I mean, I was married already, I don't know, 2-3 years or something. And I never was sure if I really wanted to have a child, to be honest, because my childhood was like, you know, it was what it was. But I thought, I'm not sure if I want to repeat that whole thing there, right? And so some people said that I was already pregnant when my father-in-law died, but that's not true. But it was so close. So after he died, I think 2 months later, I got pregnant because I realized, and that was so big, I realized that my body is made for giving life. When that man was dying and we're sitting with him on his bed, while slowly, slowly his breaths were getting slower, I realized, my goodness, I can give life. And I was extremely inspired. And which is also weird in a way, you know, because on one side I was sad that my father-in-law was passing, and he passed very quickly. In a couple of months, he was sick. I think it was 2-3 months and he died. So from a very agile person, bam, bam, very quick. But on the other hand, I realized, hey, I have this amazing opportunity. So 2-3 months later, I was pregnant. And I was super, and I wanted it fully, you know, it wasn't just like, oh, I just got pregnant. I really fully wanted it. It's my only child I ever made. So, I still say today, it's my the best thing I ever did in my life, I would say. Giving life, and not only giving life, but also, of course, accompanying that person to grow and to become a person of his own, and then, you know, let them go and have their own lives. But I think that was the biggest, and it was so close, you know, that was so close to each other. And a similar thing happened when my son was 3 months old. My grandfather died. So you know how often death and life is so close. So it was like he waited to see him.
Yeah.
You know, it was his grandson. And then he let go. 3 months later, he said, Regina, it's time now for me, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's, so life and death is so close, because we often think, oh, you know, push it away, you know, and, but it's part of our life, basically.
Yeah. That's so beautiful about your grandfather.
Mm.
and how he hung on to see his great-grandchild, because this points again, I mean, what now the science, medical professions, you know, cutting-edge institutes like IONS, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, like the one you sent me about science of emotions and so on. And all these eminent learned people who've been doing their research for decades, people who are studying near-death experiences, who are studying death, all kinds, they're coming to so many of the conclusions that a lot of pre-Christian religions and indigenous people have known and acknowledged. You know, the connection between the spirit, if you like. You know, what was it that made your grandfather hang on? Was it because his measurements in his blood were such and such and they were not so, you know. And then concepts like the river of life, the interconnectedness of things. You know, it's, I guess now we're finding the scientific language to say, oh.
Yeah.
But isn't it nice also to think there's so much we don't know? I kind of like that.
We don't know. We forgot, because these indigenous people, I'm also looking a lot into them lately. You know, the Council of the 13 Grandmothers, for example, which I love. You know, they're coming not only from there or there, they're coming from the whole world. It's amazing. We just forgot, or we didn't listen to them anymore because we were so busy with getting technology, economy, I don't know what, you know, up and running. So it's, and I think it's also, yeah, it's nice to see also with meditation when they come from the science point and they say, now we know why meditation is so important. Yeah, the brain is doing I don't know what. Yeah, it's okay when the, you know, when the science comes and kind of gives you also another angle to that. But if we're very honest in our hearts, we actually know, you know. So, I mean, yeah, my grandfather, I wish, I mean, that would be really a reflection on its own. Waiting, and he was already very, very weak, you know. He was, and he knew exactly when it was time to say to each of us goodbye. He called us. He said, I want to say goodbye. I was like, wow, you know. So he gave
How old were you?
I was 32.
Okay, so this only happened a few years, I mean, recently. Not when you were a child.
Thank you, Zarin.
I mean, I thought this happened when you were a kid, you know. That's why I said, how old were you?
When I was a kid, I had my son. How was I a kid?
Yeah, sure, sure.
Anyway, so yeah, it was really the life circle, you know. So he knew I was pregnant, so he waited till I gave birth, and then he saw him. And we have one of these wonderful pictures where the four generations, I mean, him and the grandson together. And then he could let go, you know. He had done what he had to do in his life. We don't know. I mean, everybody has his own call. No, very beautiful, very beautiful. Yeah. So there is a circle. I think that's what the indigenous people would call it in a way. You know, there is a circle on the spirits and the souls and
And that kind of a peaceful death. Wow, that's a blessing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic to chat with you, Regina.
Same here, my dear. It's always, you know, even if we have talked maybe before about the one or the other aspect, there's always a new insight. There's always a new angle to it.